When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Kevin Walsh, the Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast, back in the biggest way because we are actually doing a podcast that no one thought we would be able to do, which is the Micah Parsons Was Traded Reaction Podcast. Oh, man. What in the world actually happened here? We're going to get heavily into this. We will also get into the college football world, futures, week one best bets, all of that is here on this show. But we have to, of course, begin with the fact that Micah Parsons, one of the best players in football, one of the most valuable players in football, has been traded off of the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers in a move where this is just a bit of housekeeping. Thank you, Parsons. Thank you, Dallas. Thank you, Green Bay, for holding up the sanctity that is the concept of a trade request. We ended up, going 1-for-12 on trade requests and players being traded, but I think this one is big enough to carry the load. There's a lot of different ways that you can go with this, right? Are we all in on the Packers? The numbers have moved significantly. Is there any hope? Is there any shiny light here for the Dallas Cowboys? There's also the deal that was done, and that is the contract, and that is the trade return for the Cowboys. And I just want to start there because I think that is such a fascinating piece of the Micah Parsons trade. The return comes out. It's 2 first-round picks, and a good player in Kenny Clark. Not a great player, not an unbelievable value for Dallas. Age plus contract, who knows how long he'll actually be a Cowboy for. And it, I think, left a lot of people feeling like, that's it? You would have thought that if Micah Parsons was going to be traded, the return would be so gaudy that you would have not a 50-50 split on who won the deal, but you would hear a little more praise for Dallas. Now, there is some praise out there for Dallas. Again, we can get into the silver lining for that team. But it almost feels like if you're doing a winners and losers column, there's an urge to put the rest of the NFL in the loser column. 2 first-round picks sounds beatable, especially if you are, let's just take a couple of teams, for example. I'll throw New England out there. Let's throw Jacksonville out there. Let's throw Carolina, Arizona. My point is, I think there are teams who, if they offered the same trade, 2 first-round picks, realistically, within the Dallas organization, they could have said, okay, the Patriots' 2 first-rounders are more valuable than the Packers' 2 first-rounders, right? I think that is at least a league-wide perception, and I don't bring that up to say Because, listen, I kind of like New England. My point is, it's a little surprising that this is what it ended up being. It is, again, brutal for Dallas fans, those who live in Dallas. They're Mavs fans, they're Cowboys fans, you know, hopefully, I don't know if most of them root for Texas football. Let's hope so. It could be a big week, and we'll get to it. Oh, we'll get to it. But it seems like, once again, you're dealing with a situation where you had a once in a two-decade window traded while maybe not canvassing the full league, right? I just would have thought that they could have done a little bit better. And I think what's fascinating about this is, you know, how does Dallas end up dealing Micah? Well, clearly the relationship was a disaster, right? Clearly, Jerry and Micah Parsons, it was a real fracture. And Parsons was not going to play for the Cowboys unless they met, I think, what ended up being incredible contract demands, because I think Micah got angry about it, and I think they upped the ante, and I think that's a little reflected in the deal that he got with Green Bay. And I think at that point, Jerry Jones was not going to be pushed around. So you get to this point here where the two sides are really angry with each other. I mean, Micah Parsons lands in the winner column in this. How does he not? Like, do we have a situation where, you know, David Mulligetta, the agent for, you know, who now everybody knows his name, Micah Parsons' agent, expressed to Jerry, like, we're going to Green Bay because they're going to give us this $47 million, you know, annual contract that completely shatters the market? It's so stunning to me that, again, like, if you're going to trade Micah Parsons, right, I would think you have the ability to, you know, again, go elsewhere. And maybe Green Bay then would have just had to come over the top for an extra first-round pick. But if you're Dallas, you cannot, in losing Parsons, in the same way when the Mavs lost Luka, where the story is not only, I can't believe we don't have that guy, but the story is also so much, wait, that's all we got? No, what? Come on, that's all we got? Look back to when Anthony Davis was traded from the New Orleans Pelicans to the Lakers. Pelicans fans felt like they won the trade. Laughable. But that's how they felt. You have to be able to find it has to be easier to find some of the optimism in a deal like this. And I think that's where it becomes a bit stunning for the Cowboys. The contract piece of this, and look, I'm not going to hang on it too much because it's probably the least important part of the whole thing. I am just stunned that Green Bay had to trade for Dallas, had to trade with Dallas, and then shatter the market like this for Parsons. Like, Parsons occasionally presents team forward. This is not a team forward trade. This is a team forward deal. This is a Parsons deal. If you look at these contracts, these guys are getting sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars more than the next guy, not millions of dollars more than the next guy. Here's $40 million, here's $40.5 million, here's $41 million, marginal differences. Micah comes over the top $5, $6 million more than the next guy. So I don't think we've seen a situation where this is going to be the new standard, and eventually we're going to see a bunch of non-quarterbacks getting $50 million annual. At some point, because salary caps raise, but remember, Watson got fully guaranteed money. That was a one-of-one. This Parsons deal could be a one-of-one, an outlier, especially if it doesn't work out great for Green Bay. It'll be a little different if Green Bay goes out there and wins a Super Bowl this season. Right? You might see teams that really ante up and willing to make some crazy deals. So that's probably what we need to spend the most time on. Is this going to work for the Green Bay Packers? Is it time to buy the Green Bay Packers? I'm sure some have in the market, and the market was expecting it, preparing for it. This team shifted right into the top five of odds. They were tied at the time with Detroit at around a 12-1. They're still in that 12-1 range. They've been dropped a little bit, or Detroit's actually been dropped, creating some separation. In credit to the Lions, they've actually held here a little bit in the market now and gone back in front of Green Bay for the odds to win the NFC. And I'm somewhat torn on where I land on the Packers now. So next week, whether it be a little bit here on this show and certainly on Game Time Decisions on Sports Grid, you know, I'll give you my playoff team, Super Bowl pick, this, that, and the third. Green Bay, for me, was not a playoff team this year. First of all, the same teams don't make the playoffs every single year, right? So it's always funny when you are willing to go out on a limb how everyone's like, oh, what are you thinking? It's like, oh, I'm thinking that the NFL isn't copy-paste, is what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking it's a Green Bay team last year who couldn't beat good teams. Lost both games to Philly, both games to Detroit, both games to Minnesota. They had two wins against playoff teams. They were by a combined 7 points. It was the Rams before they figured it out and eked out 2-point victory against the Houston Texans in a game I'm pretty sure they didn't even cover. So they were not an impressive team, ultimately, if you were super honest with yourself last year in Green Bay. And as I was going through the roster, what to me it felt like they were missing the most was a certified, unquestionable star. Josh Jacobs would be the close to making the argument for me, not Jordan Love. But now they have that in Micah Parsons, and Micah Parsons kind of completes this defense. Because now you can look around and feel like you have a star at all three levels. Of course, Parsons up front. They might have hit on Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M in the second round of last year's draft. He had a really, really good rookie season. And Xavier McKinney's a baller on the back end. Their free safety, who was a former New York Giant. So this defense now should easily be one of the 10 best in football. That alone is a recipe to get people to buy in on the Packers because the offense is littered with upside. Because we've seen great moments from Jordan Love. Because we've seen Matt LaFleur win at a high level. We've seen Josh Jacobs be one of the best running backs in the league. And the pass catcher room, while it doesn't have any bona fide stars, it has a lot of youngsters that people like, including, first time in a long time, the Green Bay Packers get a round one talent in the wide receiver room in Texas's Matthew Golden. So you start to see the upside there when it comes to the Green Bay Packers. But as, you know, I thought more and more and more, I think the end result for me will be putting the Packers in the playoffs. But I'm not buying this team to win the Super Bowl. This is a sell all in all. Micah is incredible. Micah Parsons may now end up a lock for Defensive Player of the Year because if the Packers can put forward a top 5-6 unit and he goes out there and is healthy for a full season and gives you 15 sacks, Parsons narrative-wise just likely runs away with it. Also, look, it's voted on, and I'm not saying he wouldn't deserve it, but it doesn't hurt that most media members don't like or they feel like Jerry Jones is bad, so it would be another way to prove to Jerry Jones that he is bad. And I am not saying that that isn't warranted. I also think Jerry Jones is bad. It's kind of, though, an opportunity, I think, for the voters to double down on that concept and vote Micah Parsons. Parsons is the favorite. He should be the favorite. He should be the favorite. But also, Micah Parsons in health is not a 100% guaranteed thing, not to sound like Jerry Jones. He's not Derrick Rose, right? But Micah Parsons can miss some time, and I don't think it should be just washed over that Micah Parsons has not been practicing all year. I'm not sure Micah Parsons plays week number one. He probably does. I don't think it's a guarantee. And Parsons, look, I understand that we all would think the back, you know, second opinion was all tied to, you know, Micah Parsons kind of pulling weight within the battle against the Dallas Cowboys. But I don't know if Parsons enters, I'll tell you this, preseason healthiest player of the year, Micah Parsons is not a candidate on the ballot. I think that we could all agree on that, okay? Hey, let's draft guys to play 17 games. What round does Micah Parsons goes undrafted is the point I'm trying to make here. And then we're right back to a Green Bay team that I had missing the postseason. Why? Because I think it's a quarterback-coach combination that is often overrated. I do. Jordan Love to end 2023 went on an absolute heater. Loads of touchdown passes, started to cut out the interceptions, and he followed it up by, appropriately, rolling Dallas in their building on the road as a 7 seed. That was then followed with giving the Niners a run. The game ended, though, with a Jordan Love interception. And the Jordan Love interceptions are a real problem. And I understand that Jordan Love cut those interceptions out to close out the season. But the second he went into the playoffs, he threw three against the Philadelphia Eagles. They scored 10 points. Jordan Love was terrible in that football game. It's really funny because a lot of people, I've seen this in the Jalen Hurts debates, and I promise I'm not going to try and, you know, fully open this Pandora's box, but they use the game against Green Bay against Jalen Hurts to be like, ah, see, don't overrate the Super Bowl. We all saw the Packer game, da-da-da-da-da. And then those same people will put Jordan Love in front of Jalen Hurts. When Jalen Hurts was obviously the better quarterback on the day, it wasn't close. Jalen Hurts finished that game with two passing touchdowns, no turnovers, had 167 total yards, 6.2 yards per attempt. Jordan Love had no touchdowns, three interceptions, 222 total yards, 6.4 yards per pass attempt. I'm sorry, no touchdowns to three picks or two touchdowns to no picks. You tell me what's better. I'll hang up and listen. What are we talking about here?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
And it's not just Jordan Love, though, who keeps getting a pass. Matt LaFleur, I'm looking at you. See, Matt LaFleur came in for Mike McCarthy. And I'm not a big Mike McCarthy guy. It's incredible how this is all like tied together some way, right? I'm not a big Mike McCarthy guy. And we didn't know what it was going to be. And what it ended up being was Aaron Rodgers ripping off MVPs. In the first season of LaFleur, they went 13-3, they being the Green Bay Packers, which was a fantastic season. They ended up losing to a Niners team with Jimmy Garoppolo bad on the road. That Niners team was an absolute horse, though. But they got beat up in that football game. Okay, but it happens. Next year, Green Bay, number one seed, Aaron Rodgers, MVP. They lose at home in the NFC Championship game to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Favorites in the football game. Decision-making was not good from LaFleur to kick a field goal down 8 with 2 minutes to go in the football. I mean, come on now. Why does everybody forget that? They're at the 8-yard line, down 8 with 2 minutes to go. They had already given up 31 points. He kicked a field goal. Woo! That's ugly. How do you finish it? How do you follow that up? Oh, another 13-win season. Another Aaron Rodgers MVP. And they lose off a bye at home to the Niners in a game where the opponent scored 13 points and Jimmy Garoppolo went 11 of 19, 131, no touchdowns and a pick. They lost that football game. And I know that so much of that falls on Rodgers because Rodgers is the star, but LaFleur is the coach. So Matt LaFleur and his 3-5 playoff record are always far too forgiving. I've seen LaFleur with better teams than this one. I'm sorry, when Aaron Rodgers is ripping off MVP after MVP, when Aaron Rodgers in a 2-year window throws 85 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Does anyone even hear what I just said? 85 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 2-year window. I will never list a top five quarterback. I cannot imagine a world where Aaron Rodgers isn't considered one of the five best quarterbacks of all time. Like, I know the winning matters, but my goodness, man. Age 37, 38. Two-year window. Two MVPs. 85 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. Doesn't even make sense. And never the... Right, but again, everything's on that guy. LaFleur gets no blame. Well, I look at this Green Bay team as a team I am going to put in the playoffs, okay? I'm going to put in the playoffs, I think, now. But I am not going to pick this team to win the Super Bowl, make the NFC Championship game. Green Bay's in, but all in all, they will be a sell for me in some spots. Week one, they play Detroit. As we get closer and closer, I'm getting more and more. I'm getting lower and lower on the Detroit Lions. So here's the Dallas side of this, though. Okay? Here's the Dallas side of this. Is there a silver lining? Did they do a good job? You know, it's really interesting here, right? We're here on the Kevin Walsh Show, which could either be hosted by me or it could be hosted by Pops. And, you know, my dad's a Cowboy fan, and we were on the phone quick, and I was a little surprised. He was actually, like, happy. He was over it. I don't think it was his dream scenario to have Micah Parsons traded. But it does seem as if Parsons... The way it played out at the end, the stuff on the sideline, like, and I think that's probably why Micah's traded. Like, initially, Micah was doing everything right and it was all Jerry's fault. I think things maybe got escalated a little bit, and then people were like, you know what? I'm done with this thing, right? I'm done with Micah Parsons, which is interesting. Here's where I land, though, all in all, for Dallas. I think there are teams in the NFL who would be wise to put their eye towards the NBA and realize there is something to an actual reset and rebuild. I understand that is not how the NFL works. You have to understand something. In the NFL, okay, we have 32 teams. There are only two teams in the entire NFL whose fan base, if I said, hey, you didn't make the playoffs this year, are you disappointed? Would answer no. And that's the Cleveland Browns and the New Orleans Saints. Every other team is under the impression that they should be actually making a playoff push. From the Raiders to the Jets to the Seahawks to the Panthers to the Cowboys themselves. That is how the NFL works. But a reset in the NFL could be incredible because nobody else is doing it. Giving yourself a legitimate window of 3 to 4 years of picking in the top five, waiting on quarterback. Here's the thing. People say, oh, you can't tank in the NFL. Yes, you can. You know who was supposed to be the worst team in the NFL last year by far? The New England Patriots. And if the New England Patriots didn't win week 18 thanks to Joe Milton and the Bills not needing to play their starters, the New England Patriots would have had the first overall pick. Because we looked at it, we went, wow, roster's bad, QB play is going to be bad, they're going to be terrible. And they were terrible. They were terrible. You can be terrible. The Browns are going to be terrible. Don't get cute about that. They're going to be terrible. You can know you're going to be terrible. The thing is, for Dallas, they do not fit that description. The Dallas Cowboys have the highest paid quarterback in football. That right there means you cannot be terrible. I mean, you might end up terrible, but that's not your goal. Your goal is to win at a legitimate level. And Dak is going nowhere. CeeDee Lamb is going nowhere. So for Dallas, you're in a really weird spot. Because here, Dallas, especially with what Micah Parsons was paid, if Micah Parsons would have been given that contract from the Dallas Cowboys, I wouldn't have come on here and said, wow, great job, Dallas. Way to get it done. Way to keep that superstar. I wouldn't have. Because I didn't like Dallas with Mike actually on the roster. I didn't like the defense. I didn't like the coach. I didn't like the setup. I really didn't. So I'm open to the idea of moving on from Micah. I am. Because I'm open to an NFL team actually hitting the reset button. Should that NFL team be the Dallas Cowboys? I think that's a valid question, right? Two first-round picks and a player who's kind of a win-now piece. This is the problem. The Cowboys are trying to Golden State Warrior 2 timeline this thing, except I'm not sure they're actually in position to execute either timeline. Right? So two timelines means we compete for championships and we're resetting with high-level draft picks. Well, the draft picks that they got from Green Bay are not supposed to be high-level draft picks. Those project certainly in the 20s. Certainly in the 20s, right? And we'll see what the postseason success looks like. So, and you only came away with two additional. To be right, like, you throw a third pick on top, you now say, I have six first-rounders in the next 3 years. That feels a lot different. But that's not what Dallas has. And the competing for championships timeline is not what the Cowboys are on. Dallas is set up to have one of the five worst defenses in football. I won't hear anything about it. I think they might have the worst. I think they might have the worst defense in the league. I'm not as in on some of these youngsters, and I don't like the secondary. Siobhan Diggs and Deron Bland are ball hawks, but that's in coverage, it gets ugly. And a lot of the ball hawking success, I think, occasionally could be tied to Dan Quinn, who is an A++++ defensive coordinator. And Dallas missed last year and will miss again this year. And the coaching situation is a disaster. Because here's the thing with Dallas, if you want to defend this team, Dallas keeps striking out. Did the Dallas Cowboys want to trade Micah Parsons? No. They wanted to pay him. Strikeout. Did the Dallas Cowboys want to bring back Mike McCarthy? Yes. And they couldn't figure out a deal. Strikeout. And then, instead of getting an exciting hire, they just elevated Mike McCarthy's offensive coordinator. A coach a bunch of people thought should have been fired, myself included in Mike McCarthy, and then along with him, Brian Schottenheimer. That's a mess. That is a mess. I think there are arguments to be made that Dallas was better off trading Micah. But that is self-inflicted. You have to understand that if that is the case, you've put yourself in a bad position. On this podcast, I've said Milwaukee should be ready to trade Giannis. That's not a good thing, right? You should not actually, it shouldn't be a good thing that I think you should be trading one of the best players in the NBA. And it's not a good thing that Dallas should be trading one of the best players in the NFL. They are poorly ran. There's no two ways around that. There's no two ways around that. And they're in a weird spot now. Because Jerry Jones, you know this, keeps saying we are going to win. Jerry's expectations for Dallas this season are to win. Their over-under win total is 6.5. If the Dallas Cowboys finish this season 7-10, that's over the win total and under Jerry's expectations. And then what's the next move? Jerry already clearly doesn't like Dak Prescott. That's clear as day. He's annoyed he gave him the money. He's annoyed he gets injured. He's annoyed that he doesn't win playoff games. He can't get rid of Dak fast enough. And at this point, the decisions that are made so wild in Dallas, maybe a year from now, we'll reset this whole thing and Dallas is doing a full tank, blow it up, reset, and Dak gets traded somewhere. Maybe. You're like, oh, no, dead cap, too much. They don't care. The things in Dallas are not ran well. That you cannot debate. So there is some I don't even know if optimism is the right word. There's a case to be made that they were better off trading Micah than paying Micah. And I am even in line a little bit with that. But it doesn't mean it was a good day for the Cowboys. It doesn't mean the Cowboys won the trade. And it doesn't mean the Cowboys are even set up better, that much better, just because they got the deal done. But also, shout out the fact that we actually got the trade. Because that's awesome. That's awesome. And I listen, this is where I just have to be an NBA guy about it. But it's incredible to watch the NFL world react. Be like, oh my gosh, have you seen anything like this? This is amazing, da-da-da. And it's like, yeah, that's why we love the NBA. Because the NBA gives us one of these a year, right? I mean, that's the reality. Like, NFL guys kept going, hey, what's crazier, this or Luka? And every person who, like, you know, walks in both worlds, like, Luka, never, just please don't bring that up again. Let's just stick to this. Because if you compare it, then the Micah thing doesn't even look all that explosive or interesting, which is incredible. We're going to do a podcast break. We'll get right back here. College football futures and college football week one picks. College football season right here, man. Love it. Week zero was good. If you're listening to this on a Friday, ideally you are, on Thursday, I got too excited for the college football season and allowed myself to keep betting games that involved FCS teams. That's on me. So I'm not doing that the rest of the week. And that'll be good. That'll be hopefully to the benefit of everyone. But there are no FCS futures. I want to get into the college football futures here because I really like their... There were a few teams that I considered at the top of the board, and then there were two teams that I considered for longer shots when it came to a national championship pick. I ultimately landed on Clemson, and it's really interesting because, you know, it's whatever you want it to be. Like, do you want to be on an island? Do you want to have a lot of people backing your pick? And I think, you know, you want to be somewhere in the middle, maybe. Clemson feels like a national title pick I'm hearing more and more of. And that worries me a little because there's elements of Clemson I worry about. Cade Klubnik last year, their quarterback, was not good against good teams. Flatly. It's very Drew Aller. And I would never bet Penn State to win the national championship this year because of Drew Aller more than anything else. James Franklin a little bit too, I would say. Now, the prices are very different. I would argue 7-1 Penn State, 12-1 Clemson right now. But again, Klubnik still has those same problems. So here's what I'll say on the Clemson pick. They do return a ridiculous amount. 4 or 5 starters on the offensive line, top 3 pass catchers, and Cade Klubnik, who did overall finish the season with 36 passing touchdowns to 6 interceptions, chipped in 7 rushing touchdowns. And defensively, they have not just really good players, they have stars. Again, the best version of Clemson football is when they were running roughshod with a defensive line that included Dexter Lawrence and Christian Wilkins. I don't want to invoke the name of those guys lightly, but the expectations for T.J. Parker and Peter Woods are of that. T.J. Parker and Peter Woods are seen as potentially the first two quarterbacks that will go off the board in the NFL draft, first two players who are not quarterbacks that will go off the board in the NFL draft next year. And they both play on the same defensive line. That is outrageous. That is crazy. I think Sammy Brown has legitimate sophomore linebacker. I think he has legitimate All-American upside. And Avion Terrell is kind of the man in the backfield who is supposed to create havoc. They return a ton. And one thing that got me in a little more on Clemson was Dabo changing his tune. Dabo was one of the most vocal coaches about not wanting to embrace the portal, playing players, and I think it was hurting him. That changed a little bit, and it wasn't only noteworthy in the portal, it was noteworthy in finally getting a suitable replacement for Brett Venables. Long time, during all those natties, or those, you know, championship runs, Brett Venables was a superstar defensive coordinator, now the head coach at Oklahoma. They bring in Tom Allen from Indiana. The reality on Clemson is, I'm being serious, how do I feel about this pick right now? It's not my most confident title pick I've ever had. okay? I will let you know when the game against LSU this weekend is over how I feel. If Klubnik looks terrible, we're in for a shaky one. Because it's not going to matter what he does next week against Troy or at home against Syracuse or even on the road against Boston College. It's not going to matter. Because when I get to the playoff, I'm going to be worried that Klubnik's going to let me down. If he can, and the LSU defense is good. The LSU defense is really good. If Klubnik shines, Clemson's number should be chopped. Chopped. Because that's really the swing factor for this football team. But, and we'll, I'll give you a pick for that game in a bit, but that becomes the most interesting thing for Clemson. Is can Klubnik actually deliver as maybe the best quarterback in college football? Klubnik might end up the number one overall pick next year, especially if Arch goes back to Texas. So you have all this returning production and maybe the best quarterback in college football. I think what I would say on Clemson is of those teams, so there are, I believe it's like 8 teams at 15-1 or shorter. I think Clemson, from a value perspective, I make the best case, right? I also considered of the upper echelon teams, Alabama and Oregon. Alabama brings back a ridiculous amount on the defensive side of the football, like crazy. And they have maybe the best offensive line, maybe, in college football. I really like the coach in Kalen DeBoer. He gets his OC back from the Washington days in Ryan Grubb, who's in the NFL last season. Ty Simpson, though, like Cade Klubnik, I know is at least good. Can he win big games? We don't know if Ty Simpson's good. Should Alabama be 9-1? $3 shorter than Clemson? No, I don't think so. You know, Oregon's at 15-1. And Oregon was, it was really going to be Clemson or Oregon. I like Dante Moore. I could be, the thing is, the last time we saw Dante Moore, he was not good, right? So that's a worry. And, you know, Evan Stewart's a little injured. I like, you know, DeCorian Moore, this 5-star wide receiver. There's hype. He's a freshman. Is he 18, right? That's not bringing back your top 3 pass catchers. The offensive line's a little shakier. There's some pieces you like on defense, but it's not as guaranteed as the Clemson guys. So, like, the Oregon number doesn't feel, I mean, again, I think there's a little meat on the bone there, but it doesn't feel outrageous. Like, they shouldn't be 7-1. I think Clemson has an argument that they should be in front of everyone other than Texas. When you think about playing in the ACC and the returning production, and Dabo's a legitimate national championship winning head coach. So that is how I get myself to the Clemson national title future. I then took a longer shot. It was either going to be Florida or Ole Miss. I landed with Ole Miss, and the separator really is the schedule. Florida has a roster loaded with young potential superstars. Florida also could be, Florida could be one of the, let's see what their preseason rank is again here on for Florida. Was it 15? Yeah. So Florida could be one of the 15 best teams in college football and finish 7-5. That's how tough the schedule is. Road games to Miami, LSU, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, hosting Texas, neutral site game against Georgia, hosting Florida State. Heck, this team in Florida now is going to play a week 2 game against South Florida, who may end up getting ranked because they beat Boise State. They host Tennessee. You have right now 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games against ranked teams at the moment, and South Florida is probably going to become a ranked game. Think about that. Think about that. So as much as I am interested in the upside with DJ Lagway, who could be the best quarterback in college football, that kid's a star, future first overall pick, I believe in the moment. We'll see what it looks like this year. I thought I would maybe get a little bit better because of just how difficult the schedule is, where for Ole Miss, I think we have some similarities in terms of upside, but undeniably a much easier schedule. Here's the schedule for Ole Miss, okay? First 4 games. Outside of a trip to Kentucky, you're home for Georgia State, Arkansas, and Tulane. You shouldn't really be thinking twice there. They'll host LSU and then host Washington State. October 18th is when Ole Miss plays their second road game. Second. This team really should start the season 6-0. The worst case scenario is 5-1, but I don't think they will be. I really don't. I think Austin Simmons has a world of upside. And this is a team who last year beat Georgia. And I think that's the most important thing for Lane Kiffin. I understand he let some easy ones slip, right? The loss at Kentucky, the loss at Florida. He understands that can't happen this year. But in order for me to think the 50-1 shot for a national championship is even remotely worth it, I have to actually think that this guy can win big games. He finally did last year. And by the way, that win against Georgia is, that was an impressive victory. Jackson Dart, opening drive, intercepted, injured, 7-0 Georgia. They got a short field and they immediately turned it into a touchdown. And then Austin Simmons led a 10-play, 75-yard touchdown drive to settle this team up. Converted a fourth down at midfield, by the way. And when I say midfield, they were, you know, it was 4th-and-1 at the Georgia 44. You don't get that? This thing could have got real ugly. Defense woke up. Jackson Dart took over the last play. But that was our glimpse at Austin Simmons last year. So I understand they're replacing a round one talent in Jackson Dart, but they got a big-time talent in Austin Simmons there. They really do. How many games is this team going to be booked as an underdog in? At Georgia? We'll see what Oklahoma is. I think Ole Miss is better than OU. I've seen Lane Kiffin turn defenses with big-time portal additions. I know last year's defense was great, but I don't think it was expected to be as great, so perhaps this year's unit can surprise. At 50-1, I think they're a 10-2 team who makes the college football playoff, and I think we're getting ourselves a really, really good number. So I'm playing Clemson, and I'm playing Ole Miss. I'll say, I mentioned all those, you know, favored teams to make the college football playoff. The only one who I kept out, look, don't be crazy, okay? You could maybe, there. It's. I'll read the list, okay, of teams who are minus money to make. Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, Penn State, Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Notre Dame, and Oregon. No, not LSU. Notre Dame and Oregon, okay? Sorry, let me clean that up for you guys. Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, Penn State, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oregon. 8 teams, okay? You want to leave out... You should leave out 1. Leaving out 2, stretch. Leaving out 3, nonsense. Nonsense, okay? Expanded field, great rosters. You know, schedules all vary. I only left out 1, and it was the Georgia Bulldogs. I think Georgia could go 8-4 this year. I'm playing their under 9.5 win total at a plus price. I think they lose to Texas, which is one of the most important starting points of this bet. I believe they lose to Texas. Sark owes Georgia a loss last year. Because last year, Georgia goes to Texas, and it was like a wake-up call. It was a welcome to the SEC moment. The Dogs rolled them. That game was 23-0. I know at one point it kind of got close because last year, you know, Beck had these interception games, this, that, and the third. But then to get the rematch in the SEC title game and for Gunnar Stockton to lead the way for an overtime win, it's just, it's something that Texas should have never let happen. And I think Texas gets a lick back this year. So what you then have for Georgia is a 6-game window where I see multiple losses. At Tennessee, home against Bama, home against Kentucky, at Auburn, home against Ole Miss, neutral site Florida. Auburn's has a bye going into that game. Bama has a bye going into that game. Tennessee, Ole Miss, Florida, I think one of those teams can clip them. I think there are 2-3 losses legitimately in that 6-game stretch. Defense isn't as good as always. Offense doesn't have a bankable superstar. I'm not sure Gunnar Stockton's even good. That's their starting quarterback. I'm under Georgia. I think they missed the playoff this year. I think Kirby Smart is great. I don't think this is his season. Last one for you guys, Heisman Trophy, and then we're going to do some week 1 picks, okay? The Heisman Trophy, the last 2 seasons, has been about individual excellence, not winning. When you look at the Heisman Trophy this year, Arch Manning, Texas, favorite, followed by Cade Klubnik, Garrett Nussmeier, Jeremiah Smith. The expectation is you're going to see winning out of these programs, right? That's why Ty Simpson is 18-1 and Julian Sayin is 20-1. The idea is oh, it's going to be maybe best. Whoa, what if it's best quarterback, best team? Okay? That's why Gunnar Stockton has the same number as DJ Lagway. If DJ Lagway was the quarterback of Georgia, they'd be 4-1 to win the title. But the idea is, oh, Georgia's going to win games and Florida won't. The last 2 years, that is not how this award has been decided. This award has been decided by individual excellence. Travis Hunter and the Colorado Buffaloes did not make the playoff. It didn't matter. Travis Hunter was that special. And in second place was Ashton Jeanthe. And one, Ashton Jeanthe fits the profile of individual excellence where, you know, obviously he pushed up against the single season rushing record and was the heart and soul of that Boise football team. Okay? But Jeanthe in the head-to-head battle, you would think, oh, I made the playoff, he didn't make the playoff, could have been a tiebreaker. Nobody even brought it up. It was just about the individual performances. And keep in mind, those two guys comfortably the whole way stuffed Dylan Gabriel from getting any consideration, who led the only unbeaten team in the country at the quarterback position. Dylan Gabriel last year, 30 passing touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 4,000 total yards, 7 rushing touchdowns, completed 73% of his passes, 72.9. Unbeaten quarterback, wasn't in the race. And it wasn't just last year. Go back to the Jaden Daniels season. Jaden Daniels didn't win a single big game his Heisman Trophy season. Not one. First game of the year, they play Florida State. They lose by 21. Then they go to Ole Miss, lose. Go to Bama, lose. The only other ranked opponent that they played was Missouri on the road. And that was a miraculous win because they were down late in that football game, but there was a pick six that got the cover ultimately for Mizzou. That LSU team in an expanded college football field wouldn't have made the playoff. Jaden Daniels still won the Heisman Trophy. So at some point, there could be value on one of these top-end guys. I want big-time numbers to start the season. Two guys. Devin Dampier of Utah, Desmond Reed of Pittsburgh. Now, these are two teams that I actually have making the playoff. Okay? I think they just need to be around there with some individual excellence to get themselves legitimate conversation. We start with a 60-1 number on Devin Dampier. Devin Dampier is a New Mexico transfer playing at Utah, okay? And here, Devin Dampier last season ran for 1,166 yards and 19 rushing touchdowns. He plays quarterback. Last year, Devin Dampier, in the final 4 games, ran for almost... Here are the games. He went 12 for 207, 3 rushing touchdowns, 17 for 127, 28 for 193, 3 rushing touchdowns, and 17 for 101 and 3 rushing touchdowns. He had a 4-game stretch of over 700 yards and 9 rushing touchdowns to close out the season. He's a quarterback. This is a... Devin Dampier should absolutely finish with 40 total touchdowns and 4,000 total yards. He will. Devin Dampier at 60-1 on a Utah team that I think's got some legit juice. I think you are going to be looking at a very, very legitimate Heisman contender if Utah's good, because the statistics are going to be there. Now, 60-1 is a nice number. How about 400-1? That's the Desmond Reed price. If you're listening to this, you like college football, you definitely know Devin Dampier. You may not know Desmond Reed. You might not. Desmond Reed is the running back on Pittsburgh who, in, you know, if you look through like the magazines and this, that is projected to be a first team All-American, kind of all purpose. Here's how I found out about Desmond Reed. Because I started to do some college football fantasy drafts. And Desmond Reed goes first overall in those drafts. First overall. By the way, those are, if you play fantasy, they're like super flex leagues. So it's not Cade Klubnik or Arch Manning. It's not Jeremiah Smith or Ryan Williams. It's not even Notre Dame's Jeremiah Love. It's Desmond Reed. Why? A couple of games from Desmond Reed last year. How about week two against Cincinnati? 19 for 148 on the ground, 6 catches for 106 yards, and a touchdown through the air. Woo! Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Running back. How about against Toledo in the bowl game? 33 for 169 and a touchdown. Chipped in 15 yards on the air, bell cow style. Played Clemson last year, 14 for 68 on the ground, 10 for 108 through the air. Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Desmond Reed has a legitimate shot at a 1,000 season. Like the quarterback in Eli Holston, I really like Pitt this year. I think they blast through a 6.5 win total. Blast through it. Pat Narduzzi knows how to pull off an upset. And they host Notre Dame and Miami, only ranked teams on the schedule. There's some tricky spots. Backyard brawl's a rivalry. Louisville's a solid football team at Florida State. Syracuse, you guys know that, you know, they're live to knock off a team. I think Pitt has the potential to be 10-2, 9-3. I really do. As long as Desmond Reed stays healthy, the first overall pick in college football, fantasy college football at 400-1. All I'm saying is ACC Network at noon, Duquesne. If you've got an extra screen, just wait and see what that final stat line looks like. I'm thinking it's 200 all-purpose yards, and he returns kicks. Desmond Reed's hitting a Heisman pose. You should hit it week number one. Start the conversation. 400-1. Let's take a quick podcast break. We'll get right back here, give you the week one card on the Kevin Walsh Show. All right, right back here in the mix with you guys. Week one, we're going to go through the big games. We're also going to get a couple prop picks on the board and a few other standout spots. I think I have 8 overall picks here for the weekend. Let's start with the big games. Texas, Ohio State in Columbus, 1.5-point spread. It looks like Texas may close as favorites in this football game. The money line starting to shade their way. Total 46.5, and I love Texas. Don't care if it's a wheel play. Don't think it's a wheel play. I think Texas. I think Texas and Clemson are the two best teams in college football because the quarterback rooms come with a little bit more certainty than Alabama and Oregon. I think Texas has a legitimate chance to go unbeaten. And I think Texas, being on the road in this game, is a gift. Because that way we don't have to worry about laying almost a touchdown if this game was in Austin. Because that's the way the numbers are trending, by the way. We would probably be laying a touchdown, right? Let's just say it's 3 points for home field advantage, right? And it's a 1.5-point number now. And then the way the games have been starting to get bet, because that's a 6-point swing. It would start to approach 7. Instead, we're getting this team money line. Texas is better everywhere. Better at quarterback. Okay, outside of the wide receiver room. Fair enough. But let me say this, okay, about Jeremiah Smith. Because everyone keeps saying, look, best offensive player, best defensive player for Ohio State with Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs. First of all, Arch Manning has just as good of a chance to be, I think, as good as Jeremiah Smith does, and certainly has a better chance to be more impactful than Jeremiah Smith. Jeremiah Smith was unbelievable in the college football playoff. Jeremiah Smith was not the best wide receiver in the country last year. That's not what happened. That's not the story. I understand he finished fourth in yards. He also played about 100 more games than Harold Fan and Nick Nash and Tet McMillan, or even Travis Hunter, Tyler Warren. The Iowa State receivers. So Xavier Restrepo. There were a handful of guys who had better seasons than Jeremiah Smith in the regular season, at least. I understand he came on big in the playoff. I get that. I do. But Arch Manning, the supposed to be number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy favorite, we keep going, oh, best offensive player in college football. Well, let's find out. Let's find out. I'm on Jeremiah Smith under the 11.5 regular season receiving yard prop. I'll step up to the window. I'm not scared of it. I think he's under the number. I think that number's too high. He missed that number by 200 yards last year in the regular season. Oh, and by the way, last year when he played Texas in that playoff run where he was dominant, he had 3 yards. He had 3 yards against Texas. And then, because it's easy and fun to say, we go, best offensive player, best defensive player, Jeremiah Smith, Caleb Downs. Caleb Downs, real good, okay? Texas has two guys who will be drafted before Caleb Downs potentially in the NFL draft, and Anthony Hill Jr. and Colin Simmons. And I'm not 100% sure. Now, some of that's positional value, but I'm not sure Caleb Downs is definitely better than those guys. Those guys are stars. Anthony Hill Jr. is a star. If you look on FanDuel, there's a price for Anthony Hill Jr. to win the Heisman Trophy. That's because of me. I had one of the producers of the show ask them to post a number to see what I was going to get. It's like 500-1. Maybe I should put the dollar on it. I just wanted to see. Because I didn't like that they had the Colin Simmons price. Anthony Hill Jr. deserves the price. And here's the thing. Ryan Day last year, everyone's like, oh, you're going to apologize to Ryan Day? No. Chip Kelly, an all-time college football coach, was his offensive coordinator. And Jim Knowles, a really good defensive coordinator, was fantastic for them during the stretch run. Well, Jim Knowles is with Penn State now, and Chip Kelly is with the Vegas Raiders. And I've seen Ryan Day lose in this building before. Michigan does it every year to him when the game's here. Now, Notre Dame gave him a scare, and that was a not ready to task Notre Dame. That's not the game that finished, you know, late at the goal line. It was a bang under. I think it was a CJ Stroud Notre Dame team. I saw Mario Cristobal win in Columbus with Anthony Brown Jr. Okay, at Oregon as the quarterback. I think Ohio State's vulnerable. I think I'm not saying the number's wrong. I think just it's a blessing that this game is at Ohio State, so we don't have to go out there and lay a touchdown with Texas. I think Texas rolls. I think Texas rolls Ohio State in this game. Florida State, Alabama. Deep breath. Take the 14. We're going to go with the Seminoles. I like the Seminoles over a 6.5 win total at an expensive -150. I think Florida State having a brand new roster is exactly what you want because last year's roster was putrid. Of course, DJU got cut by the Chargers. The whole thing was a mess for Florida State. But the thing for Florida State is with how bad last season was, they might storm the field if they cover the 14. I am not saying that that is all they are preaching to their guys. And when I know that they're not saying cover. What I'm saying is they're not preaching keep it close, but internally, you know that's what they have to believe. We cannot get blown out if you are Florida State. You cannot get blown out. There are different goals for me entering this game. For Florida State, this is how you have to make a step in the right direction. Okay? You are not going to, in one game, rehabilitate your program. I mean, if you win, amazing. And we win our bet. But for Florida State, hang against Bama, beat up on Texas, you know, East Texas A&M and Kent State, smash Virginia on the road, and then go to Miami in the or host Miami in the Are We Back Prove It spot. For FSU, that's the recipe. And they can do that. This is an Alabama team who's, and Kalen DeBoer as a coach, kind of in a different situation. Kalen DeBoer typically gets a cupcake in week number one, just a team to beat up on, right? That's what Bama's used to, get some time. This is a little bit different, and I don't know what Ty Simpson is. I don't know if Ty Simpson should be laying 14. I know the defense is good for Bama. I've said that. Ryan Williams is a star. He likely scores in this football game. But for Kalen DeBoer, who last year had, you know, similar to what we talk about with Ole Miss, had some bad losses that cost them a trip to the playoff, Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. Obviously, they would love to win big like they did last year at Wisconsin, right? Or at LSU. But for Bama, this is, you know, it's putting results up on the board. For Bama, goals to make the playoff. And they found out last year, how do you make the playoff? Record. Because at 9-3, were Alabama one of the 12 best teams in the country last year? Obviously. Don't lie to yourself. You can drop the charade if you think they weren't. You can drop that charade. It's over. Okay? SMU was in. Indiana was in. It's all, but like, don't, come on. You know Bama was one of the 12 best teams. They didn't get in. It's okay. That's the format. It's the system. But for Bama, that's what it's all about this year. I like the 14 with FSU. Clemson, LSU. Look, man, this is an easy under for me on the 57.5. And when I say easy under, I mean it's an easy decision for me to make because I like these defenses. I trust these defenses, and I trust them even more than the offense. There's a lot of hype around the quarterbacks. I've talked about, you know, despite being my national title pick, how Cade Klubnik has some questions on that side of what he does against the best teams. LSU just overall, to me, has to prove it. There's so much hype around Garrett Nussmeier. I almost feel like, to some degree, Garrett Nussmeier gets elevated because what we've seen from Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels. Seriously. Like, Garrett Nussmeier last year, I get it. He throws for 4,000 yards. 29 touchdowns, 12 picks, not a mobile guy at all. Not a mobile guy at all. Against Alabama last year, one touchdown, two interceptions. Against Ole Miss, three touchdowns, two interceptions. Texas A&M, two touchdowns, three interceptions. I mean, come on now. You can't win with that. You can't win with that. Just throwing interceptions in every single big game that they play. I know Nussmeier's going to sling it, but this to me is an offensive line that was absolutely depleted and a team who's going to be a little more defense first. A healthy Harold Perkins Jr. You get Patrick Payton, the Florida State transfer into your building, which is a really nice get. Whit Weeks, the linebacker's there. I like these. I trust these defenses more than the offense. I'm playing under 57.5. I'm playing over in Miami, Notre Dame. I really like the over in this football game, all right? I'll tell you right now, I have about half of what I want to have on this game, but if you're listening to this here on the Friday, that's a Sunday game. I think they'll drop boosts for that game, so we'll just start to pepper this total more. Maybe the over is going to keep dropping too because there's some concern about weather. I'm not concerned about weather, especially on the Notre Dame side of it. Maybe the best offensive line in the country is blocking for the best running back in the country. Heck yeah. Sounds good to me. Jeremiah Love last year. Rushing touchdown in every single game, 17 on the season, ran for a smooth 1,000. That's exactly how that's going to look this year. But it's just an even better wide receiver room. And maybe CJ Carr, passing-wise, can hit the ground running a little bit more than we saw for Riley Leonard. You know, Riley Leonard came on nice for Notre Dame, but he struggled early to really pass the football. Maybe CJ Carr can elevate that a little bit. The downside for Notre Dame is they lost their defensive coordinator, Al Golden. If Al Golden was Notre Dame's defensive coordinator, they might have been my pick to win the national championship, despite the questions at quarterback. But number plus defensive certainty plus O-line, all that. I just want to, again, maybe it's Marcus Freeman's defense. Maybe, right? There's still some really great players on that Notre Dame team, and maybe they figure it out as the year goes on. But in week number one, I think Miami's Carson Beck can have a little bit of success here. So Cam Ward went first overall. Carson Beck was the favorite to go first overall entering the last college football season. So Carson Beck's going to be able to, I think, put some points up on the board here more than people think. I understand Miami lost plenty in the receiver room. None of these guys are on NFL rosters, except for the tight end Arroyo. I mean, listen, Cam Ward was fantastic, but that's what they lost, Cam Ward. The offensive line's still really good. Running back room could be a little bit more explosive. Miami brings in a brand new DC and Heatherman from Minnesota. He might be really good. Again, it's game number one, new system. I think we've got juice here. 49.5, I'm on the over Miami Notre Dame. I'm on Florida State plus the 14, Texas Moneyline, and Clemson LSU under 57.5. I am on the over Texas A&M UTSA, 56.5. Love this over. Okay, UTSA brought back nothing defensively and everything offensively. So that is where they're going to be able to give it their best to compete in a game like this. Last year, UTSA played Texas. They lost that game 56-7. This one will be a little bit closer because the offense will do a little bit more. And they kept playing, by the way. They didn't run the clock out. They kept throwing. They missed a couple of field goals in that game. Last year's Texas defense, much better than the Texas A&M defense they're going to face here in week number one. And the Aggies are going to be able to run it. This is a 250, 300 rushing yard type of game for Texas A&M. I think this is points a plenty. I don't know, 45, 21. This is an over city here. Texas A&M, UTSA. My favorite bet of the whole weekend, Michigan, New Mexico. Give me New Mexico plus 35 and a half. That hook is out there. It's not too expensive. Minus 120. ESPN bet if you'd like, okay? I really like New Mexico. I think the offense can surprise. It's littered with FCS All-Stars, and the defense has a sneaky back seven, which is all you really want when you're trying to stay inside a number. Let your opponent feel their best running the football, okay? And that is what Michigan's going to want to do, okay? Next week, Michigan plays Oklahoma in the biggest game in week two. They're not going to want to unveil too much. They're going to want to settle Bryce Underwood in, a true freshman getting this start. They're going to want to settle Bryce Underwood in. I think keep things mostly vanilla. That is a game next week, okay? I want to tell people this. That is a game next week against Oklahoma that Michigan, if they win, might end up then favored to make the college football playoff because it'll be a statement plus what remains. I love New Mexico catching 35 and a half because I don't even like Michigan as much as others in the market do anyway. So Michigan's not the type of team I'd look to lay wood with. Also, Sharon Moore last year barely won these games, right? When you think about playing Fresno and Arkansas State, those were closer football games. Harbaugh never cared about running these games up and making, at least down the stretch there, making a mockery of these things. Give me New Mexico plus the 35 and a half. I'll end it with this prop style because I know not everybody can get involved with these. I'm on Joey Aguiar, the Tennessee quarterback, noon kick against Syracuse over 213 and a half passing yards. 2022, Hendon Hooker, 285 yards per game in this system. 2023, Joe Milton, 234 yards per game in this system. Nico was a disaster last year. Like, I don't think this all worked out incredibly for Tennessee, but Nico was bad. He was 201.2 yards per game last season. Joey Aguiar is a gunslinger. He averaged 270 yards per game in his 25 games at App State. I think he throws it against Syracuse. Zag under Drew Aller, 242.5 passing yards, the Penn State quarterback in their game against Nevada. He's had three games against lower-level teams like this, under this number in two of the three. For his career, if this was the number in every single game, he would be 32-7 to the under. He's not a kid who lights it up. It's a group that brought back a pair of 1,000-yard rushers. Okay? You're going to want to let them eat. You're going to want to see if these two guys can each get 100 on the ground, multiple touchdowns. Those two guys are like plus 100 and plus 120 to run for two. I don't think this is a game where Drew Aller shouldn't be playing in the third quarter. They're 45-point favorites nearly in this football game against Nevada. Give me the under Drew Aller. Give me the over Joey Aguiar. That is the college football card. That is how we get you ready for the college football season here on the Kevin Walsh Show. Next week, NFL previews, you know, setting some things up for the people here. Cannot wait. It's the best time for you to subscribe and be in the mix with us here on the Kevin Walsh Show, a Sports Grid podcast. I will see you next time.